and satisfaction and contentment. Mm-hmm. Generosity first, and then you will get a gift from us to help saturate and satiate your greedy brain.
That's wonderful. Generosity and gifts. So thank you so much. Keep calling 516-620-3602. You have 1 minute left to please call us. Your contribution of $125 helps millions of people by supporting public radio and keeping us on the air. And also the wonderful gift, which is priceless, is learning about your brain and how to use it. Thank you so much, Mark Waldman. I love speaking with you.
Thank you so much. And you have less than 60 seconds to change your brain and the brains of millions of other people. Yeah. Have a wonderful day.
Right. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.
WBAI listeners don't sound like this guy.
I'm very proud now that we have a museum, the National Mall, where people can learn about Reverend King, so many other things. Frederick Douglass is an example of somebody who's done an amazing job and is being recognized more and more, I notice.
RSVP today for the DC Arts and Culture Tour, February the 25th through the 26th. This overnight weekend trip includes transportation, a night stay at the Embassy Row Hotel, silent disco dinners, and of course, museums, including an entire day at the National Museum of African American History and Culture. So you can learn about Frederick Douglass and walk through Black history from 1400 to today. Spots are going every day and the trip is limited to the first 28 people who pledge. Make your pledge today. Go to WBAI.org and click on the DC Arts Tour. Let's go to DC, folks, so you don't sound like this guy.
The contributions of Frederick Douglass will become more and more.
Hi, this is Donovan, and you're tuned to WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
Well, as I was saying to Ellen Datlow just now, I'm trying to get my thumb drive up here so I can play my intro music. But, you know, can that happen? I have myself to blame for this, because we could have come here a little earlier, and we didn't, but that's because of me. Ooh, am I getting a level on my microphone? Let me see. No. Okay. 1, 2, 1, 2. Could you say something into your mic?
Hello?
Ah, yes.
You getting me?
I'm getting you. I'm not getting me.
Okay.
Or at least I'm not getting me in my headphones. Yeah. Okay. We are sabotaged. Ah, here we go. We are slightly sabotaged here, which means that you tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifico Radio, New York City, WBAI, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. This is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. And normally I would have music for you, but we're on a new schedule now. Not just that we're on a fund drive, but Catherine Davis is now on Monday afternoons and has vacated the midnight to 1:30 slot. Health programming, curiously, will be on from midnight to 1, and then Hour of the Wolf from 1 till 3 a.m. So mote it be. I'm very glad to get the extra half hour, and I have to acclimate to that. But you know what? I think I can actually start my theme music, as if by magic. and good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us this morning, editor Ellen Datlow.
This time, the National Space Administration requires all aliens to register. Forms are available at your local post office. Those without forms must appear, however briefly, at the Bureau's astral offices on Nooker Street. Aliens, register now.
I'm Dan Persons, movie reviewer for Hour of the Wolf. One of the better moments of the Lego Batman movie comes hard after one of its worst. They're both in the same sequence, actually. On the good side, near the beginning of the film, after a prelude in which Batman vanquishes the Joker, who gets away anyhow, and what appears to be the full roster of Dark Knight adversaries with a few ridiculous additions thrown in, we get to see Batman at home in an island isolated Wayne Manor, and after all the public adoration, it's a pretty grim sight. He shoves some leftover lobster thermidor into a microwave, eats it alone, watches Jerry Maguire for the umpteenth time, and laughs at the You Complete Me scene. Director Chris McKay goes for long, static shots here, keeping Bruce in his cowl, even in his off hours, a perhaps oblique reference to the common insight that the Batman is the real person within the Wayne facade. The stillness is a shocking contrast after the kinetics of the opener, and quite successful in building empathy. The bad of this is that the sequence begins with Batman returning to the Batcave, him walking a lengthy hydraulic pathway as the vast bat arsenal, all the various Batmobiles, Batplanes, what have you, are displayed to him on robotic platforms. On the one hand, this is a proper way to kick off the sequence. It underlines that Bats has all the wonderful toys, but lacks for the human contact that would make it all worthwhile. But this is a Lego movie, and as each bit of Bat paraphernalia, all of course constructed of Lego brand building pieces, drifts across the screen, you can easily envision the marketing arms of both Warner Brothers, which produced the film, and the Lego company rubbing their hands in glee at all the Toys R Us shelves that will be crowded with million-piece Batman-themed building sets. This is the conundrum of a movie franchise born of many mothers, licensed from a toy product, first becoming cutscenes for video games, then those turning into TV series and made-for-video cartoons. In the first theatrical extension of this franchise, The Lego Movie, which I didn't find quite as radical as a lot of people did, they got around this by embracing what is supposed to be the core mission of Lego, to inspire imagination and creativity. something which ironically the Lego manufacturers have been criticized for abandoning the further they embraced licensing movie and comics characters. But while the Lego Batman movie occasionally makes nods to Lego physics, the fact that anything in the Lego universe can be deconstructed to make other things, that happens mostly on the peripheries of a scene, with prime screen time taken up with copious pop references. By the end of the film, the list of bad guys has extended beyond the DC universe to include, among others, Voldemort and the Daleks, and a lot of fourth wall breaking, frequently to comment on the various incarnations of Batman over the years. In many ways, the Lego Batman movie more closely resembles one of the short, direct-to-video superhero films that used the Lego franchise and that paved the way for these features, and even those took better advantage of the reinvention concept. Frankly, I grew kind of bored by the film. You could easily have removed the Lego aspect from it and its frenetic, almost desperate lunging for jokes at any cost. I'm not sure why Michael Jackson's The Man in the Mirror was supposed to be funny, but apparently it is, becomes glaringly obvious. There is, at some point, an attempt to lay out a theme of interconnectivity by having the Lego figures literally interconnect, but by then it's too little too late. The Lego Batman movie is satire that's too distracted to figure out what exactly it's making fun of, and that's no fun. On to something better. A young princess wanders her kingdom and stumbles upon a monster trapped in a tower. Or maybe it's not a monster. Maybe it's some harmless creature imprisoned by her father under the influence of a mysterious succubus. Not too surprising a setup, except that this tale is called American Fable. The kingdom is actually Wisconsin. The time is the early 80s, when farmers were struggling and suicide wasn't an inconceivable option to solving one's financial woes. And the monster is a businessman imprisoned by the girl's father at the goading of a mysterious woman in red to save his farm. There are times when director Ann Hamilton seems satisfied with using the fable part of that title to elide some lapses in motivation for her characters and an ending that doesn't quite tie up all the loose ends, but she gives a beautiful pastoral burnish to the darkness of her story and gets a great, alternately dreamy and alert performance from Peyton Kennedy as a girl being awakened from the cocoon of childhood to an awareness of the not at all comforting realities of the world beyond. American Fable is kind of like Pan's Labyrinth filtered through Fargo. It is a haunting experience. You could easily envision the new film Stray Bullets as the work of a Tarantino-smitten 17-year-old who wanted to create his own Reservoir Dogs knockoff. There's lots of swearing and gunfire and honor amongst a trio of thieves who are being chased by an uncommonly prescient hitman. And just for good measure, a pair of teenage boys held as hostages gets thrown into the mix because 17 years old. And I say it's easy to envision a teenager coming up with this, because a teenager did come up with this, specifically star-slash-writer-slash-director Jack Fessenden, son of horror impresario Larry Fessenden, a man who here not only appears as one of the criminals, but also serves as cinematographer. With Daddy so close to his kid's side, there is some sense that this was more of a father-son project, only with a father that could recruit the likes of James LaGrosse and Kevin Corrigan as co-stars. This is the kind of thing that typically gets done without public exposure, an exercise to get one's feet wet in the art before moving on to find one's own voice. The younger Fessenden has apparently not yet learned that a story does need a point. The film ended with me going, wait, what? But it does have its entertaining moments. A new cinematic eye has not yet emerged with Stray Bullets, but there's stuff here to suggest young Jack should, at the very least, keep exploring. For Hour of the Wolf, I'm Dan Persons.
Thank you, Dan. Oops, wait. Which is my... You see, I switched my mic. Ah, okay, I'm one of these, because now I can hear myself on the headphones, and I can draw a level. The... control room mic, my mic, the announcer's mic, is to use, this is not one of the seven words you must not use, but it's Verschlungen. Okay, it's number three up. Ellen, if you look at that list there, it's the seven words you must not use.
Where?
To your right. To your far right.
Oh, yes.
As it were. And it is from the far right.
Okay.
So you see, when I want to curse, this S-P-F-C-C-M-T, right? Mm-hmm. So when I want to curse, I'll say number three.
I'm surprised you can't say P.
I'm sorry?
I mean, I'm surprised you can't say number two. That seems
You can't say piss? That would piss me off. You can. You can also say number seven.
Yeah, see, why not?
Yeah, talking to your mic. You see, the problem with those are not FCC violations. Mm-hmm. That was Carlin's list.
Oh.
That was George. Those were the seven words that George Carlin chose.
Okay.
And what WBAI got taken to the Supreme Court for was for playing Carlin's seven words you can't say
right,
on television.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
The reason we lost, and the only reason we lost that case, was because it was broadcast on a Saturday at 2 p.m.
Oh, right. Yeah, it had to be after prime time.
Yeah, I mean, it's when little kids could be listening.
Yeah.
So it was...
And hey, Mommy, what does that mean?
Exactly. Exactly. So there was a test case for what time of day. Say, well, what if it was 5 a.m.? Little kids should not be listening unattended. And if they are, we should ask the parents. So I had on Hour of the Wolf a gentleman by the name of Harlan something or Ellison. And he read the premiere of a short story called Shatterday, which is a great story. It's a 45-minute story, and all the curse words come in the first half hour, and the last 15 minutes were clean. So I timed it. I recorded him the night before at the School of Visual Arts, where he was reading for Leo and Diane Dillon. And I broadcast the thing, and all the naughty bits were over by 6 a.m., although the story continued to 6:15.
Right.
And I was suspended by the FCC, and the Department of Justice told the FCC, drop the case.
Good.
And so we didn't win, but that's what established safe harbor.
Right.
But you see, so those words are misinterpreted by, let's say, the management of some radio stations, ours, to be that that is the list.
Right.
But it isn't. Those are Carlin's words.
Right.
And he says, this shouldn't even be one of the words. And he's right. It's not. Because these words are commonly found on primetime television. Have you seen a TV series called The Good Place?
No, I don't watch television.
Oh, that's right. It's shockingly decent, and it got really good at the end. And it all takes place in heaven. You can't curse. So the lead character, who's supposed to be a bad person who got into heaven by accident, is trying to hide the fact, is constantly saying it's all forked up. Well, that's on TV at 8:30 in prime time. So
there's leeway.
There's leeway. There is. But then again, that was during the Obama administration. There's a new FCC commissioner, and I don't think he's our friend.
No.
Good morning, Ellen.
Good morning.
Ellen Datlow has won how many awards? Nominated for how? Ellen Datlow's the best editor.
Thank you. One of, maybe.
One of the, but nominated pretty much every year in the Hugo Awards for that. And how many? You have an amazing amount of metal behind your kittens or cats, depending on their age, on your shelf.
Well, actually, my awards are on my armoire. The cats can't get up there.
No, that's right. That's right.
And they're not metal. I mean, not all of them are metal.
Now, the Howie is metal, isn't it?
The Howie is not metal. It's resin.
It's resin. Serves him right. We're talking about H.P. Lovecraft.
Although the new award's going to be metal. of some sort. I can't talk about.
Oh,
It'll be unveiled at the next convention.
At the next World Fantasy Convention in October.
I think it's November.
Because
I'm not sure.
Lovecraft was such a horrid, horrid racist that it has been determined that that person should not stand for the world's best fantasy. And so there was a movement to replace it, which the movement won. And what the new award is going to be is a deep, dark secret.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. How many people made that decision?
You mean of what it is?
Yes.
Well, we had a competition. We had people submitting, artists submitting designs.
Ah!
We had, I think, three or four runners-up.
Mm-hmm.
We had two semifinalists, and we chose one.
Cool.
And is it gonna be this? That was decided by the awards administration, although it was approved by the whole board, the winner.
And the World Fantasy Award, the Nebula Awards, the nominations of which closed 90 minutes ago, are voted upon by members of the Science Fiction Writers of America. The Hugo Awards, famously, if you're in the field, are
voted upon by any member from a few years before and the current year.
Yeah. But the World Fantasy Award is a juried.
Yes, but there are nominations. The nominations are open to people who have been members of the World Fantasy Convention. I forget how many years, a year or two.
I think two.
And then the current year.
Yeah.
And the there are, I think, the top two. I'm not sure. I can't remember how many, but a couple of those become the finalists, and then the judges put on.
And you're often one of those judges.
I'm never. No.
I
no,
think
never.
You were.
No, you're only allowed to be a judge once. I was a judge in 1987.
Well, that was good enough for me.
And that was plenty, believe me. No one has ever judged twice. No, it's. Well, actually, maybe very, very early on before. Someone might have been a judge twice, but no one. Once you're a judge, you never have to do it again, and that's one of the selling points.
Well, that's actually a blessing, exactly.
Yes.
I have had my. Is this going to be the same design every year?
Yes.
Okay.
Although we're still going to have the baby Lovecraft pins. We have hundreds. I have hundreds of them. For the nominees, we'll get the baby Lovecrafts. I have them many in my possession. And we're not going to, I mean, we're never going to run out of those.
Yeah.
There's so many.
Okay. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had my opinion as to what the award should be and that it should change every year. It should be prohibitively expensive. But in my fantasy,
yeah,
it would be a dragon.
Because
you know why?
Yeah.
Because every culture has a dragon. There are Chinese dragons. Mm-hmm. There are South American dragons.
Mm-hmm.
There are
yeah.
British just
no, I can see what you're saying. Yeah, we didn't want it. Well, we wanted to be a little less literal.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And we got something that we're really happy with.
Good. I'm looking forward to seeing
it. I'm sure everyone's going to hate, but tough luck.
Well, you're not going to get
right. I mean, the people who wanted to keep it the Howie are going to hate it, and the people who wanted something else are going to hate it, and we don't care. You know,
yeah,
it's beautiful. Yeah, and it's going to be a very nice award.
Yeah, and you can't say that the Lovecraft Awards were beautiful.
Well, I thought it was cute, though.
They are cute. It is such a cartoonish.
Well, that was the intention. I mean, it's caricature by Gay and Wilson.
Yeah, and you take one look at it, and you can't say we are honoring this wonderful human being.
No, it's the honoring the winner.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was created at a time in 1975 or whenever. And it was Gay and Wilson volunteered to create the award, and he created this statuette.
Yeah.
And as offensive as Lovecraft's beliefs were,
seep their way into some of his fiction.
Yes, but he has been a great influence on fantasy.
Yeah.
Dark fantasy.
Absolutely.
And you can't deny that. And that's never going to go away, and it shouldn't. But, you know, obviously, some people think that, I made the decision. I did not make the decision. It was a decision by the whole board, not just the awards administration, but the entire overall board. which was run by David Hartwell at the time, to change the award.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took a while. Well, partly it took a long time because we were trying to reach Gahan to talk to him, to let him know in advance. And he was we were unable to reach him for about 8 months. Mm. And finally we gave up and just wrote him a letter. I think he's not well. So
I'm sorry to hear that.
He's, I mean, I'm assuming because I haven't been able to reach him.
Lovely guy.
We used to have lunch about twice a year or three times a year.
Does he still live where he used to live?
He's living in New York someplace. I mean, I know I have his address. I finally wrote him a letter, but he never responded.
Because he used to live within walking
distance. He lived
in
Sag Harbor.
Yes.
Yeah.
He had a place in Sag Harbor, but he also had a New York.
No, not for a long time. But then he left the place in Sag. I mean, maybe at one time he did, but not for decades.
Well, okay.
And then he, about 5 years ago, 4 years ago, he left Sag Harbor and moved back to New York full time.
Okay. But no doubt not in the place where he used to be.
No.
Yeah.
No. So, you know, we were trying to, we wanted to talk to Gahan in person about it and talk, you know, about that it was time to retire the award.
Yeah.
And that we appreciated what he did.
He's still, I see him once every 4 or 5 months in the New Yorker.
Right. I mean, I assume he's still producing cartoons,
yeah,
I hope.
Yeah, he is. Well, stuff is appearing, whether it's from the trunk or whether he's drawing new stuff.
I don't know.
I don't know, but he's selling stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I saw a Charles Adams cartoon I'd never seen about a year ago. Mm-hmm. So
there might have been stuff, you know, stashed
discovered
away
somewhere. Yeah,
right.
No doubt. Ellen Datlow, for those who don't know, is an, we said she's an editor, but primarily at this time of dark fantasy and horror.
No, mostly horror. No, I don't do dark fantasy.
You don't do that anymore.
Very little.
There was
no,
there was a time.
No, horror. I've never done dark fantasy. I mean, I edit some dark fantasy, some fantasy, but basically I edit horror. There is a difference, and I don't.
There is,
you know,
a big difference.
No, there's a little difference. I mean, it overlaps. But anyway, I mostly...
I will never get this.
Although I've been editing more science fiction for Tor.com. I mean, I acquired like 4 stories that were science fiction last year that were on Tor.com.
Yeah.
And I've been encouraging people to send, you know, my writers. It took me... Because I haven't been editing science fiction in so long, it was really hard to get people to send me science fiction. And luckily... Finally, after like 2 years of begging, you know, I got some.
Ellen,
but I'm doing science fiction, fantasy, and horror for Tor.com.
Cool. There was a time when Ellen was so far ahead of the curve with bringing Omni magazine, where you were the fiction editor at Omni, and with a stalwarty crew, brought Omni Online into existence. And then, lo and behold, something that today would be commonplace, Event Horizon, which was a website of original fiction and live chats.
And reprints.
I have recovered every last one of the chats.
Wow.
Using archive.org.
Wow.
And I fashion that needs tweaking and all.
Well,
that.
They were a mess. I mean, don't forget, a lot of them were phoners because the writers did not know how to get online.
That's right.
Well, it wasn't even online. They didn't know how to do chats. I mean, we had to do it by phone and we typed for them.
Yes.
And that started in Omni. We started doing those in Omni.
Right. Because it was me and Ed Bryant, who just passed away.
Yeah.
And
Janice something.
Yeah.
Janice Morris? I forget. I'm sorry. I can't remember her last name.
And there was somebody named Pete something?
That doesn't sound familiar. I don't know.
Well, I recovered these by going to archive.org.
Mm-hmm.
And actually able to get into, believe it or not, the old, both Event Horizon and Omni website.
Well, the interesting...
And I could only recover text, but that's all I wanted.
Right. Well, and interesting, I was just talking about this on... had a discussion on the Lovecraft e-zine last Sunday night, and one thing I mentioned was Omni, before we went online, like you go to a website online.
Yeah.
A few years before that, we... Remember when AOL had content? Right. Well, I think it was Ford, some automobile company gave us lots of money to commission novellas to put on AOL someplace. I never did figure out where the hell they were on AOL. I mean, they were in some back long? I don't know. I have no idea where they were.
They're probably, because AOL.
But where were they? I mean, how, did you know, did you ever find them on AOL? Did you see them on AOL? I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, but I'm
sure. But where did they go? I mean, where were they published? That's what I can't figure out.
If you do a search on archive.org, which has recently gotten a new flow of money, and they have redone their search engines that go all the way back to basically 1996 or so, it can be found.
Well, I want to find
text
it. Just
to, only.
Well, that's all right. I want to find it because I want to see where it actually was. I mean, I just want to track it down. It's so weird.
But Ellen's creation stewardship of sci fiction for I call it the syphilis channel, the sci-fi channel. It's now S-Y-F-Y, that's why it's syphilis.
I know.
The best thing about the sci-fi channel when it premiered.
The website to me. Oh, the channel itself, yeah.
The channel was that they also had a sister website.
Yes.
And you were the fiction editor.
Mm-hmm.
And in the year.
Is originally called. Now I can't remember. It was called something not sci-fi.com.
Sci-fiction.
No, it was not called sci-fi.com. It was called the something. The website was called something completely different.
Was it? Okay.
And I used to remember what it was. If Craig Engler is listening out there,
yes.
He would remember. I don't remember what it was called, but some weird name not to do with science fiction. And then it became sci-fi.com. But what
right.
the heck? Do you remember? You don't remember this?
I don't because, frankly.
Wait, the Dominion. It was called the Dominion.
Oh, that's right. After DS9, after Deep
is that
Space
what it was,
Nine.
Which I never watched. So I have no idea where it came from.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, is that where? Okay. So, yes, it was originally called the Dominion. I don't. By the time I got there, it was sci-fi.com.
Yeah. But your section of it was
sci-fiction. Yes.
And I know that if I use Alta Vista, which was the search engine of the day, and just typed in. Sci fiction, it would take me to the page I wanted.
Now?
Then.
Oh, yeah.
Then. Now, if you go to internet.
It should be all gone.
No. Really? I mean, it is and it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Archive.org never forgets.
Even though they took things down?
That's the whole point of archive.org.
Don't tell people because then they'll find the stories.
It's a non.
Is that like the Wayback Machine or something different?
The Wayback Machine is a part. Of archive.org.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, I can find Event Horizon sometimes.
That's
on the
right.
Wayback,
that's
although
right.
it's also on Pam Weintraub's site.
Right. But Wayback has just been renovated.
Okay.
To have a better interface.
Okay.
And they still have that's so Wayback is a part of archive.org. All the WBAI folios can be found. You know, there's print can be done in PDF. Format, which is how we know that this is the 45th anniversary of Hour of the Wolf, was thanks to archive.org. Because my memory is for Bupkis. But the very year that the corporate Uber structure over the Sci-Fi Channel and Sci-Fiction and all that. The very year that they decided to pull the plug on that website was...
They didn't. They never pulled the plug.
Who pulled
Sci-fi.com is still there, isn't it?
Yes, but sci-fiction.
Well, they pulled different parts of it at different times. Well, we were one of the last that was left that was original material in addition
The year it was taken off was the year that you published There's a Hole in the City by Richard Bowes, and you had like four... award-nominated stories, some of the best stuff from any one source came out from you in that year.
I didn't notice. I mean, I don't remember.
Did. Mm-hmm. I did. I can document it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all just to tell listeners, not so much historic accuracy as how important Ellen Datlow is to the genre field, which I call science fiction.
Well, I say science fiction, fantasy, and horror.
But, in fact, encompasses
all,
you know, spec fic, which was a term invented by Heinlein.
It was
1946. Robert Heinlein wrote an essay in which he coined the term speculative fiction. And by that, by the way, he meant hard science fiction only.
Well, that's interesting. Okay.
The kind of stuff that various puppies would embrace. Mm-hmm. Without getting
into because spec fic now is basically...
It's almost the opposite.
Yeah.
Interstitial, it's the stuff you can't quite define. Kelly Link is a poster child of speculative fiction, among other great writers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's good. I like the phrase because it's all-encompassing.
Mm-hmm.
David Hartwell once had a chapter in his book Age of Wonders, and the chapter title was Why Science Fiction is the Wrong and Only Name for It. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that he was definitively correct,
mm-hmm.
but I do know that it's a clever idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because I can't go on the air all the time and say, it's horror, it's fantasy, it's mm-hmm. high fantasy, it's dark fantasy, it's science fiction, it's hard science fiction.
It's science fantasy.
It's science, mm-hmm. yes, thank you, like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It's...
No, so I don't consider... science fantasy is...
You wouldn't think Star Wars is science fantasy?
I don't talk about movies. I mean, I'm talking about literature. And there's Michael Swanwick writes science fantasy. Science fiction that reads like fantasy, and then there's fantasy that reads like science fiction.
He writes fantasy that reads like science fiction. I mean,
yeah.
Iron Dragon's Daughter, mm-hmm. everybody listening,
yeah.
that and the Towers of Babel.
And the one, he wrote something called the Towers of
Not
Babel?
Not the Towers of Babel, that's Delaney.
That's also Ted Chiang. Tower of Babylon. But anyway... I'm sorry.
He's Babylon.
Who are we talking about? Michael Swanwick. The one Radio Waves that won something, yes. The Hugo and the Nebula,
yeah.
that I published. Or World Fantasy. I can't remember what it wrote. But anyway, that was science fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah, he writes fantasy science and science fantasy.
And science fiction.
And but what he writes is he writes brilliant.
Yes. Yeah.
We'll agree on that one.
Mm-hmm.
He's just wonderful. I once introduced him on the air as a person who's been nominated for more awards than any other single writer. And he said, yes, which means that I've lost more awards than anybody.
Yeah.
Which is pure Swanwick.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful person.
Yes.
So a couple of things we need to get out of the way. One is that this is a fundraising program. We're part of the marathon, and I have been granted this week. I'm preempted next week. I won't be on, and don't know about the week after. But I'm on this week on the theory that we can raise money for WBAI, listener-sponsored radio. And Ellen's publishers of one of her brand new books, and if you go to WBAI.org, you will see the wonderful cover.
Ravina Kai.
Yeah.
I think it's pronounced Kai. Actually, it's C-A-I, so I assume Kai, not K, but I don't know.
What is the language derivation?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have never met her. I don't even know what she looks like.
It's Kai or K.
Yeah.
I would assume Kai. Mm-hmm. K-A-I is certainly Kai.
Is it? Okay.
Like Kai Ashanti
Wilson. Right, yeah.
Is K-A-I.
Mm-hmm.
So
anyway, it's a wonderful cover.
It's a wonderful cover. It's a wonderful book.
Thank you. You don't know. You haven't read it yet, have you?
I have looked through it. Okay, I have not read it. But I have certainly looked through the table of contents because your publicists were not only dead on in getting me a copy like the next day after you and I shared emails, but they sent us 5 copies of this book.
Good, good. And I'll even sign them.
And
not to anyone, obviously.
For listeners who subscribe to WBAI during this program. But it's not just subscribe. What we are asking is a donation of $40. If you donate $40 to WBAI, we will give you, as a thank you gift, see, we're not selling.
No.
This is a thank you gift for your donation of $40. May I point out that when I started at WBAI in 1967, a regular subscription was $45, mm-hmm. and $25 for a student, retired or unemployed. We are asking for less of a donation than the regular subscription to BAI until somewhere in the 80s or 90s, to obtain an autographed copy of Black Feathers, Dark Avian Tales, an anthology. It's the whole proper name is a mouthful.
Yeah, Kim Newman said, "Well, I said I don't want to call it bird horror." I said, "No, it's not as graceful."
No, it really isn't. Bird droppings. It's,
I said, "No, I want to call it Dark Avian Tales. What do you want for
yes.
my life?"
exactly. It's, well, you can always crow about it.
That's bad.
Let's not go there. The way you can do this is by calling right now at area code 516-620-3602. Again, 516-620-3602.
It's a beautiful hardcover, by the way.
Yes, it is. Or go to the website give2wbai.org, and then you can search for Hour of the Wolf. And then you will see the premium, or you can just go to the premiums area, or the gifts area, it might be called, and you will see the cover of the book. You can look under Dark Feathers, Black Feathers, sorry, and it will be there. And we only have 5 copies. Now, should enough people donate, we'll get more copies.
Mm-hmm.
We may have to buy them,
mm-hmm.
but we will fulfill this. But we have 5 that were donated thanks to
Pegasus
Publishing. Nice imprint, by the way. Very, very mm-hmm. lovely job on the book. And I'm talking about the quality of the paper. It feels like a mm-hmm. good old-time hardcover with a very nice...
Oh, I didn't even look at that.
Yeah, you see, I do. I do. I always take the cover off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And, that's a pretty color.
Yes.
Copper-colored... Whatever you call it.
Oh, dear.
And it gleams.
I should know, yeah. But embossing.
Embossing. For the...
The embossed print on the spine.
Thank you, spine. Yes.
Yeah, on the spine. And let us tell you a little something about this book that you can obtain by calling 516-620-3602 and donating to WBAI. Let us go through the table of contents. You want to take a copy out
sure.
of the box that was sent to us?
So we can both look at it.
Yeah.
And actually, the print on the cover is raised.
Yes. It's properly embossed.
Is that? But is it embossing when it's on over?
Yes.
Not engraved, you know. I thought, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it does. I love etymology. I love etymology. So, Oh Terrible Bird by Sandra Castori.
It's a poem. That's the only poem in it.
Okay. Followed by The Obscure Bird by Nicholas Royal,
yes, there are
who
two
I don't know.
There are two, he's British. There are two reprints in it. One of them is this one. Nick Royal is a writer. He also runs, he was an editor for Salt Press in England, and he's a publisher of Nightjar Press, which publishes very... limited runs of single story chapbooks
mm-hmm.
that are very
which I love.
Yeah,
I love the unusual.
Yeah. And there's another Nicholas Royal who is not him, who's also a writer in England. So it
same spelling R O Y L E.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, but I don't think he writes horror. I mean, Nick writes horror mostly.
Right. The Mathematical Inevitability of Corvids. Corvids are ravens, crows,
blackbirds.
No.
No? Blackbirds are not?
I don't believe blackbirds are corvids.
I don't know.
No, I'm pretty sure they're not.
Okay.
Corvids are almost all black, and blackbirds
are... Blackbirds are black.
They have red wings and yellow speculum.
Red-winged blackbird. You know, they're not blackbirds that don't have...
No, there aren't. Okay. The African blackbird... Barbara and I go birding.
Oh, okay.
And worse than that, I am addicted now. I am addicted to a six-hour internet TV show every day that takes place in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It's live.
Okay.
Where you watch people on safari, on camera safari.
My sister might like that. She's a birder.
Yeah. Well, it's birds, it's hippos, it's elephants, it's lions, leopards, cougars, but a lot of birds, hornbills.
Okay, let's go back.
And corvids.
So that's Sean and Maguire.
And that's Sean and Maguire.
Yes.
Something About Birds by Paul Tremblay, a wonderful human being and a good writer.
Mm-hmm.
Great Blue Heron. I last saw a great blue heron about 4 months ago at Jamaica Bay. They're gorgeous. They're mm-hmm. great. They're blue.
Mm-hmm.
They're herons. And it's Joyce Carol Oates. So, you know. The Season of the Raptors, Richard Bowes. My go-to guest. I have to have Rick on very soon.
Mm-hmm.
Because whenever
don't let him read the Alice story because it mean it's not he can't read it.
I will tell him
that the whole thing. He can read a bit of it, but he can't read it.
What should he read?
Whatever he wants, just not that. You know, because he'll it's not one, been published yet.
He'll do one of his. he'll do one of his Boston stories.
Has he read the Season of the Raptors?
Actually, I did before you did.
Okay. Now he read it. You say
no.
We'll have him read that. Tell him he has
oh,
to read that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
That's what I'm saying. Rick, if you're listening.
Oh, and it's only about 25 minutes. 20 to 25 minutes. It's
how
10
do you
pages.
Know? Oh, okay.
Because I
oh, okay.
Because I know word counts and pages.
Right. Okay.
Rick Bowes is sort of my go-to guest in a way. Every mm-hmm. time I have been canceled, changed time slot, or anything like that. He is my first guest in a new time slot, mm-hmm. and my last guest, except for the one time when it was Margot Adler.
Mm-hmm.
And then the week before that, it was Rick. So, you know, David Letterman always used Billy Crystal.
Right.
I use Rick Bowes because he's wonderful. The Orphan Bird by Alison Littlewood.
She's English.
And The Murmurations of Vienna von Jerome by Jeffrey Ford.
Which is a very weird story.
It's Jeffrey Ford. To say that it's Jeffrey Ford and it's a very weird story is a redundancy.
Well, it's very gratifying that people like it because it went through like three revisions. And after that, after a while, you can't tell it. Neither he nor I could tell anymore. So it's gotten some good reviews, which is happy.
Good, good. Blythe's Secret by Mike O'Driscoll.
He's Welsh, I believe.
Okay. The Fortune of Sparrows. I just like that title. Mm-hmm. Usman T. Malik.
Mm-hmm.
And where's he from?
He's Pakistani.
And
he's a doctor. He lives in Florida.
Oh, the Malik should have actually helped
He's a really fabulous writer. He won, I published a novella by him on Tor.com 2 years ago, and we've got a lot of nominations, and I think it actually won. I can't remember. This is terrible.
Hmm.
But I know it was nominated for a bunch of awards. It was really good.
Okay.
Then he's terrific, so yeah.
Pigeon from Hell, which...
Oh, by the way, Usman lives in... I mentioned he lives in... Sorry, he lives in Florida, and he's a full-time doctor.
So, cool.
Yeah.
Pigeon from Hell. Now, you see... That's a redundancy. Most pigeons are from
No,
hell.
I love
it's
pigeons.
Like the pigeon.
I think that's horrible. I think pigeons are given a bad rap. They're fine. They're nice. I like them.
I saw for the first time on that TV show in Africa a green pigeon.
Uh-huh.
All green. Gorgeous. Morning dove mm-hmm. type of mm-hmm. well, pigeons, of course, are rock doves. Mm-hmm. That's what they really are. They're rock doves.
By Stephen Graham Jones.
And then The Secret of Flight by Alison Campbell Wise, or a.k.a. A.C., mm-hmm. A.C. Wise. Isabel Avens Returns to Stepney in the Spring.
That's a reprint by M. John Harrison.
Yeah, you're one of the few people that really go after M. John Harrison.
Well, I published that in Little Deaths, anthology.
Okay, I remember that well. Mm-hmm. But you also used him at Event Horizon, didn't you? One of your online ventures.
I don't think so.
Well, I didn't know who he was, and I got to interview him
mm-hmm.
on your website.
Okay.
chat with him.
Right. Yeah.
Somebody was typing for him and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But and he
He's
was
English.
He was a little bit confused as to what this internet thing was.
Right.
A little bird told me, Pat Cadigan, the wonderful Pat Cadigan.
Yes, American living in London.
Yeah, even worse than American, Kansas.
Yes.
And if you were from Kansas, you'd probably want to move to London as well.
Yes.
The Acid Test by Livia Llewellyn. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a Welsh name. I don't know where she's from, but
New York.
Okay, but
I mean, she's not from New York, but she lives here.
Yes, but
I mean, she's American.
Yeah, but her, you know, my name is a German name. Mm-hmm. Her name is a Welsh name, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Llewellyn.
Yeah,
the Livia doesn't hurt either. The Crow Palace. What a wonderful title again. Priya Sharma.
Yeah, she's British Indian.
Mm-hmm.
And a doctor. She's another doctor.
Another doctor.
Who lives outside of London, a couple of hours outside of London.
Yeah. So this is... So the premise behind the anthology, well, Black Feathers says it all. There is an
bird horror.
Bird horror. Which, you know, not the birds, but bird horror, which I guess the mm-hmm. birds by Daphne du Maurier was one of the first...
Yes. Well,
not counting
the
Raven.
First, but, yeah.
There's that Poe thing.
But it's the most famous one. Or
yeah.
One, that and the Raven.
Yeah.
And the Raven isn't horror.
No, it isn't.
No.
It isn't. But Poe, people
I
equate
know.
Him.
Yeah.
As you know, because you did a whole book for Poe mm-hmm. with, where we did, where at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, we did the launch party
mm-hmm.
for that with
yes.
Veronica Shaness.
She wasn't in Poe. I didn't even know her then, I don't think.
It's Barbara Roden.
With Barbara and Poe?
Yeah. And Veronica certainly was.
She was not in Poe.
Which of her books that we did the launch party for at
the
South Street Seaport? No.
We
are well out of
this. One of the anthologies
Lovecraft?
I did with... She's not in that. Something.
Because she
Queen
did.
Queen Victoria's Book of Spells?
She. No, no, no. This is a long time ago.
Veronica did not publish that long ago. She was not.
No,
publishing.
She was a teacher.
Yeah.
At
so
the time.
She talked about Poe, you mean?
She talked. She okay. gave a lecture.
Oh, okay. All
she
right. No, I thought you meant she was in the book. She was.
She
not
was
in the book.
No, she was she was at the event.
Oh, that's different. Okay.
She and Simon Lokely. Lokely. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll prove it was Poe. Simon
No,
Lokely.
I believe you. I remember he talked about it, too.
No, he didn't talk. He read a cask of Amontillado.
Oh, yes, I remember
Except
that.
He called it...
Oh, and it was in the South Street Seaport.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. Yeah, no, I remember that. I thought when
and
you said Veronica...
Veronica
thought, yes.
did, opened the evening...
Yes, I thought you were talking about
she,
her being in the book.
She did a lecture mm-hmm. on what defined Gothic literature.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that you couldn't really define mm-hmm. Gothic literature.
Yeah.
And then Lokely read what he called a cask of Amontillado.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never heard it that way.
Amontillado.
I've always said Amontillado. Amontillado. Mm-hmm. You know what? Lokely was right.
What would he call it? What did he
say? Amontillado.
Amontillado. Okay.
That's the correct pronunciation mm-hmm. from the Portuguese. And
right.
Amontillado is a Portuguese sherry.
Mm-hmm.
So... Roger Corman had it wrong, which is probably where
right.
we get, you know, Vincent Price's pronunciation from.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe Barbara Roden was mm-hmm. in that book.
Probably.
I only met her the one
yes,
time.
Yes, I'm pretty sure she was.
Yeah, she was at the time also the chief whatever of the Baker Street Regulars.
Oh, was she?
Yeah.
I mean, I know she was in it, but I don't know she was...
Yeah, well, at that
like
moment,
officer.
She was, like, you know, mm-hmm. top officer of it,
oh, okay.
which I thought was weird for somebody living in mm-hmm. North America.
Canada, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The Northwest, the Pacific Northwest.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most impressive things about this, by the way, is when you just go to the beginning of the book and you see the credits for Ellen Datlow's books. Do you have any idea how many you've done?
No.
Yeah.
Almost 100. But a lot of them are reprints, you know.
Yeah. your point.
I mean, it's counting 21 copies of the year's best fantasy and horror.
Yeah, exactly.
Although it doesn't have all 21. It just says year's best fantasy and horror.
That's right. But it also has, like, for one listing here, it says...
Wait a minute. Where's my best... Wait, does it have
the best horror of the year, volumes one through nine.
Yeah. Well, that's weird. Nine has not finished. I mean, I'm in the middle of working on it.
Oops, well,
it should have been eight. Oh, I figured, yeah, like, right.
Well, they gave
well,
you...
Well, this year, same year, it'll be out this year when
yes,
I finish it.
Yes, they yeah. gave you credit for it nonetheless.
I did it, so...
Coyote Road, one of my personal mm-hmm. favorites.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the wonderful books with Terry Wendling, mm-hmm. The fairy tale reinterpretations, which mm-hmm. has become an industry.
Yes, it has.
It really has. Mm-hmm. ABC.
Well, it's become a soap.
That horrible series.
What horrible series?
Oh, God. Well, I don't even remember.
Oh, you mean on TV?
Yeah.
Oh.
On ABC.
I don't know.
It's
Grimm
based...
something or other?
No, that's a different one. Grimm. Oh. Mm-hmm. Are two brothers who battle creatures from Tales of the Brothers Grimm. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a new one called about Oz called Emerald City.
That's not the same thing.
No, but what they're doing is they're taking the premise of the ABC show mm-hmm. and they're creating a poor soap opera.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Based on mm-hmm. The ABC series, which for some reason I'm blotting out the name. I actually watched it in the beginning because it had a good cast. Yeah, somebody's calling.
What's that blinking?
That's the phone.
Oh.
That's the phone. You know who it is. I know who it is, but we'll let him tell us anyway. Yeah, you're on the radio.
Once Upon a Time.
Thank you. Good night. Talk to you later.
Thank you.
I told you you knew who it was.
Okay, yeah.
Yes, Once Upon a Time, which is actually a good title for the show. Mm-hmm. It started with a good premise mm-hmm. that a person from real world goes to a closed city and Mr. Gold turns out to be Rumpelstiltskin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this person was actually Snow White and mm-hmm. that person was this. And it got so... Then they started bringing in Peter Pan. And because ABC is owned by Disney... They could use all these mm-hmm. characters that Disney has usurped and copyrighted in so many ways.
Right.
So Once Upon a Time, as far as I'm concerned, in my opinion, mm-hmm. lawyers, please take note that Jim Freund said, in my opinion, that series could not have existed if not for the work that you did with Terry Wendling.
Sure, it could have. I mean, Angela Carter was doing it before us, and Tanith Lee.
Point taken. But I don't think that they carried it quite as far and well and as popular because they were doing individual stories and novels, and you were getting all the wonderful writers. And did how many in that series?
Six.
And then you sort then, of
and we did
spun
two
off
children. We did two middle, three middle grade ones. But,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got more specific with things like Coyote Road.
Well, those are the mythic series. That's different. Those weren't fairy tales at
right,
all.
Right. No, they're not fairy tales, but they're
and mythic. Those were YA. I mean, the Snow White Blood Red series was adult. Was all adult.
You know what? Yes.
And there is a difference. I mean, there is a difference.
Tell me about it.
Well, I mean, what? Being rhetorical or actually asking?
I'm actually asking.
Well, adult fiction is different. I mean, most YA is from the point of view of YA, of people of YA.
Except
young
they're
adult
always
age.
Pushing that envelope. And now there's new adult.
Well, that I don't even know what that means.
Neither do I.
But it's ridiculous. But but I mean, we were doing what Terry and I did for the first with the 6-book series was retold, basically unbowdlerizing the fairy tales that were bowdlerized by Disney and other people years after they were created in pre-Victorian times, whenever they were. You know, the Grimm's tales, the Madame D'Aulnay.
Regrimming the Grimms and...
Yeah, in a way. I mean, and they were sexual, not all the
bringing
stories.
Bringing back the Perrault.
Yeah, bringing back the sex and the violence of the original tales.
Yeah, which by the way, were intended for young people.
Not initially, they weren't. They were told around courts, a lot of them. I mean, the court, you know...
Maybe the Perrault stuff.
And the Madame d'Aulnay certainly were.
The German stuff.
Were those for kids? Some of them.
I have the books.
Mm-hmm.
I have my parents.
I mean, the original ones?
Yes.
And how do you know they were for children? Are you saying the stories or you can tell from the...
The books were. The books were mm-hmm. published in such a manner that you could scare your kids with them.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite one, the one that my mother tried to hide from me the most, but her brother, my Uncle George, mm-hmm. a.k.a. Wolfgang was his real name.
Yeah.
The book that he always frightened his little sister with was Struwwelpeter.
Right, but that Struwwelpeter, it was not a Grimm's tale, I don't think.
No.
That was a completely different thing. Struwwelpeter is terrifying.
Yes, I'm talking about the genre of books that were coming.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Grimm's. I thought you were talking about Grimm's fairy tales.
Including a lot of the Grimm's. I mean, if you follow Aschputtel, of
mm-hmm,
course.
Yeah.
You have the cutting off of the heel mm-hmm. and the loss of the toes. I don't know how many people are blinded and princes.
Right, yeah.
Those are to be read to or retold or whatever to young people. It is a way to face the world. The author, Michael Ende, German writer, with Never-Ending Story, tried to replicate that to an extent using the horror of the Holocaust
mm-hmm.
as a way of re-envisioning that in the movie, which I also like, even though it's mm-hmm. almost antithetical to the novel.
Mm-hmm.
But Wolfgang Petersen, again, a German director.
Right, I know him.
Yeah. He just called it The Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Ende called it The Nothing, but he made it this.
Well, don't forget, I mean, Jane Yolen did Briar Rose, and she did other, you know, a lot of people have been using fairy tales to retell the Holocaust in different ways.
That's the
Veronica Shainis did it, too.
Absolutely.
More recently.
Yeah. But that's the... I think that you and Terry helped create a larger market.
Oh, I agree. Than there was. I don't disagree at all. I mean, it definitely.
I'm not saying you invented it.
No. But we definitely made a mark in it. I mean, Snow White Blood Red is probably one of my best selling anthologies ever.
Deservedly.
I mean, it had like 72,000 in mass market, which is ridiculous for an anthology.
Wow.
Yeah, until they took it out of print. And wow. Now it's an we're trying to get it in as an ebook. It's like a bit of a problem. But, you know, it's been in print most of its existence.
Right.
I think it's still in print with Barnes & Noble now. I'm not
sure. Oh, okay. Yeah, they have attended.
Although I don't know if it's retired. If it is, then we could resell it again in print.
That would be nice.
Yeah, but we're hoping that it'll be an ebook soon. That's the only one of the series. The other five are all ebooks at Open Road, and we're hoping that this one will be.
Yeah,
at the time, the rights were tied up with Barnes & Noble, but it got screwed up, and they never bought the rights to it.
Okay. And Open Road largely buys ebook rights.
Yes. I mean, they did totally, and then they've started doing print books, I think, too, but I'm not sure how many.
Yeah, not that many. I think it's almost
a new
venture.
No, but to me the idea... Yeah, but that about a year or two ago they started.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how many they're doing that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's mostly an ebook program.
Yeah, mostly. And multimedia. Mm-hmm. From day one they were producing videos.
Oh, yeah, they were following me around for 2 days. It was really weird.
Yeah,
And came to my apartment and filmed me and like had me walking around my neighborhood and talking about showing off my doll. It was very strange.
All available on YouTube, folks.
Oh, God, is it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yes. And little snippets they create. I don't know if they're still doing it this way, but they would have, like, for Women's Month or Black History Month, they'd have Octavia Butler, and they'd have little snippets from people talking about Octavia.
Yeah.
And, you know, edit all these bits that we had been doing for
I helped supply a little bit of audio of Octavia for mm-hmm. them from I gave them bits from Hour of the Wolf
mm-hmm.
when Octavia was on the show.
Right.
I had her five times on the show. And it was, of course, Betsy Mitchell
mm-hmm.
who saw to it that I was able to get Octavia.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, good.
And Betsy is, she's still at Open Road?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Because the world owes Betsy Mitchell also a thank you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, she's doing a good job there.
She really is. She did a great job at Warner. And with Dark Matter, Cherie Renee Thomas is. Mm-hmm.
Was she the editor?
Yes. Mm. Yes, she absolutely was. Mm-hmm. And she and editor of Kindred. I mean, she did a lot.
Yeah.
She really did a lot.
Yeah.
So, and does a lot, I should say. And Open Road is a fascinating concept. By the way, speaking of fascinating concepts, this is WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM. My name is Jim Freund. This is Hour of the Wolf. My guest is Ellen Dadlow. I don't know how many times you've been on the show, do you?
No, I don't know. I have no idea.
Ten,
seven,
at least?
Eight, I don't know.
I think more like
more?
Ten.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, how many years?
Well, I don't do it every year.
No, you don't do it every year, but this show's in its 45th. Year since Margot Adler started.
Right.
43rd year since I took it over. I try to create as many anniversaries as I can. And you were on the show starting somewhere in the 80s. Does that sound right?
I have no idea.
It's about right. It was somewhere in the 80s. Okay. It's, you know what? It's about 28 years ago that we first met. And I know that.
Where did we meet?
We met at a Science Fiction Writers of America.
The Mill and Swill.
The Mill and Swill, which is a way for people.
It was. They seem to have stopped doing them, unfortunately.
For now, they're planning on doing one this 2017.
Oh, good. Because they didn't do it for 2 years, which is annoying.
Yeah, well, the budget.
Okay.
The CIFWA budget. But Kate Baker told me that they're trying to do one this year.
Good.
And they don't have a venue yet.
I hope I'll be in town for it.
And yeah, and I'm trying to keep an eye open for it as well. It used to be in November, then moved it to October, which made it uncomfortable for people going to World Fantasy. So, and then CIFWA just, you know, they had to reorganize. And pull back on their budget and redo their monthly magazine, change editors and stuff like that. So I think they've been...
I don't think it's monthly. I think it's quarterly. It used to be quarterly. It was never monthly. The Bulletin?
The Bulletin. But then there's the Bulletin. And wasn't there also another publication?
Forum.
The Forum, right. The Forum.
But that was not monthly either, I don't think.
Maybe not. But now that it's all... electronic. With I think Neil Clark,
he's doing the Bulletin. I don't know who does I don't even know if there is a Forum anymore.
I don't believe there is. But Neil's doing the Bulletin at this point,
right?
He was on the show about 6 weeks ago, so we discussed that. And anyhow, we met at one on the way in, and I know that it would have been about then because I was with my partner Barbara. And I know how long I've been with Barbara, 28 years.
Okay.
So.
So you had just met her then?
Well, actually, I met her 5 years before we met, but that's an online story.
Okay.
Before the web and all that, there were bulletin board services, and you met people online without it being a dating service or anything like that. And we knew each other from different bulletin boards for about 5 years until we met in person by a whole bunch of people, about 20 people from the BBS, the bulletin board system we were on, got together.
And kind of like what they call meetups now.
we called them meaningless hangs.
Okay.
At the time. And that's where we properly met. But we had known each other online for 5 years before we met. So there you go. So sort of hit the bricks running, as it were. So I was with Barbara when I met you.
Okay.
So that's how I can date it. And
where was the CIFWA thing? Was it at the Warwick?
Yes.
Okay.
It was at the Warwick in the penthouse. Beautiful view, beautiful vista.
Yeah.
Warwick Hotel on Lexington Avenue. Yeah. I really like that space. The space they were using the last couple of years was really
nice.
It
was too loud, but it was nice.
It was too loud. The bathroom was...
I don't remember the
size
bathroom.
Size of a closet. Mm-hmm. And there were only like two stalls for everybody.
Oh.
For a room that held like 300 people.
Mm-hmm.
And the elevators weren't much better.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
But once you got up there, you could see New York from four points,
mm-hmm.
and it was really, really neat, really, really nice. So let me remind listeners that Ellen's publisher, Pegasus Publishing, has done us the very gracious honor, without any arm twisting, they were really, really nice, to donate six copies, but one's for me, of Black Feathers. Ellen's latest anthology.
It's interesting they call it Pegasus Crime. And I've gotten some reviews. They sent it to mystery magazines and they reviewed it, which is great.
Pegasus Crime?
Yeah.
Cool.
Which I didn't know until I happened to notice.
Yeah.
And so the good thing is, of course, that is going to crime magazines too.
Yeah. That's a good thing. But if people, if listeners, donate $40 to WBAI, to listener-sponsored radio, to keep us broadcasting in these times, which one must say, we always say now more than ever. Well, mm-hmm. gang, we now live in an alternate universe, mm-hmm. so now more than ever.
Yes. Did you notice the dedication?
Yes, Frankie and Johnny.
And what do you think?
I was thinking of asking.
My birds. They were our parakeets.
Oh!
We had parakeets when I was growing up. Frankie, it turns out, okay, Johnny was a girl, but when we got her, we thought she was a boy, but you can't tell again.
Sort of Francine. Frankie could be.
Well, so, and John, we hoped that they would mate, but they hated each other. And then we had a Cocker Spaniel who
oh no,
savaged one of them. I can't remember which one.
Oh,
we
no. came up
because we let someone.
The moment
left
you
it
said
at,
we had a cocker spaniel,
who,
I knew
who
where
brought
that
it
was
to
going.
Us, left it on our feet. I mean, he didn't. You know, he probably shook it to death by accident. it was
a toy.
At, yeah, and the other one lasted a long time, and I can't remember who got chewed up though. I can't remember which
oh,
one.
Oh dear. Oh dear.
Not chewed up, just you know. Shook a little bit, shaken yeah, but, up, shaken
but most,
and stirred.
Most of your animal companions have been very long-lived.
Yes, well, the birds were long-lived for parakeets, actually.
Yeah, you had a cat who I loved.
My 23-year-old bitch.
Yeah.
No, she was not the bitch. Am I allowed to say bitch?
No, she was sweet. No, you can't say bitch.
No, Dinah was a bitch. Nielsen was wonderful. Nielsen was a matron when I got her. I have no idea how old. She was at least 23.
She was at least 23.
I had her 19 years.
One time I came over to your place in order to record an interview with Pat Cadigan.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Oh, was that when Nielsen adopted Pat and became the god...
No, no.
The mother of Rob.
this was after.
Oh, okay.
Because I asked you, where is Nielsen? And you and Pat looked at each other and said, shall we bring Nielsen here? And I said, please do. And you handed me an urn.
Oh.
I was traumatized.
I'm sorry. I don't remember
I was
that.
I do. I was the one who was traumatized. Pat thought it was the greatest thing
well,
in the world.
Well, she lasted a long time.
She was an elderly, sweet, wonderful cat.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
really was.
Yeah,
I was.
She was very smart.
I was allergic. Mm-hmm. I had four cats of my own for a while, mm-hmm. which is how I found out I was allergic. Oh. But you know, she
Nielsen
was, so
was
sweet,
brilliant.
I didn't care. Yeah,
yeah. I had another
yeah,
cat.
She knew how to screw up any computer.
I don't. Did I have computers then? I don't know. But anyway,
you had some technology.
Yeah,
that
Blue was the cat I had with her, and. When I lived on Bleecker Street, I faced Bleecker, and I lived in a second or third floor apartment, mm-hmm. and we had a fire escape, blah, blah, blah. And one time, Blue, who was a little tabby and kind of not that bright but really sweet, went upstairs and couldn't come down. And she's like, where am I? Where am I? And she's the one who called my name. Blue is the one who actually called my name. She would woke me up once and I woke up. I heard someone calling my name and it turned out it was Blue. But anyway, so she's howling, you know, help, you know, where. And so I'm looking up and said, oh, God. I said, Nielsen, go get Blue. Go get Blue. And she did. Nielsen went upstairs and she brought Blue down. I mean, Nielsen was a smart cat. Blue was really stupid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They can be very canny, and they can be, even the dumb ones are smart. They're just smart in a way that doesn't translate. To
yeah,
us.
Right to us.
I had a cat that just sat there cross-eyed and did absolutely nothing, and I am convinced that he kept the equilibrium of the world. there was a wisdom in his little sphinx-like pose. That was, I assume everybody can see me doing that little thing with my hands.
Yeah. In the meantime, Dinah was very mischievous.
Yes.
Dinah was a calico. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Dropped.
Yeah. And calicos are...
Always female.
Always female, yeah.
Had a lot of personality. I mean, well, Lily, I had Lily and Dinah.
I remember Lily.
Lily was like a muted calico. She was pink. And gray. She was beautiful and really good natured. And Dinah, I always got along. Dinah was wonderful. I adored Dinah. She was an orange kind of mixture of a. Well, she was an orange calico.
I just called her spotted. Orange tabby.
But she was a calico.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, I got along great with her. I had friends who did not. Dinah kind of terrorized my friend Catherine Vaz, who's one of my writers, who stayed at my apartment once, and Dinah terrorized her. And once Dinah had a psychotic break, and I had to put her in my bedroom and lock her in to give her time out. She really just kind of attacked me for no reason, out of the blue. But she never did that before or after. She was a really weird girl.
Hmm.
And she adored me, but she did not like other people. She really hated Catherine for some reason.
Yeah, just got it.
And another time, I mean, Dinah was the one who... Okay, you've seen Blow Up, the movie?
Yes.
Do you remember the scene where he's taking pictures of these two teenage girls rolling around in his studio?
Oh, yes.
Well, okay. Well, Dinah one time was like... I was on the couch and Dinah was doing that and she rolled over. And, you know, she never did this before. And I, like, would gesture with my finger, roll
closer
over.
Closer to the mic.
I would gesture with my finger, which you can't see,
right.
Roll over. And she did it. And she did this back and forth. I did it this way and then that way. For like 10 minutes, she was rolling over every time I gestured that she should roll over. And then I got bored.
Yeah, right.
But it was like, this is really weird. So I think she was very smart, but she was, and some people thought she was a real bitch, like Rick Bowes thought she was a real bitch, but I thought she was not. She was really a good girl, except sometimes.
Well, depended on your personal relationship.
Yes, and I had a very good relationship with her.
You know, I'm just looking at the table of contents again of Black Feathers, and, you know, I'm realizing there is a remarkable lack of raptors.
I think I told people not to write about crows too much. I didn't want too many.
No, I don't think that crows are corvids, but a crow isn't a raptor.
Right, you're right. Of course,
raptors are eagles and
no, well,
falcons and
right,
and,
right, right.
And owls.
I don't remember. Oh well, there is an owl. There are owls and.
Well, Rick
the obscure bird is about owls.
Yeah, and Rick's story is the season of the raptors.
Yes, and that was the one that's based on the one that was in the park, Great Red or Big Red. Remember?
Yeah.
I forget the name of it.
Big Red.
Big. I don't think it was Big Red. It was something else. Red. I don't remember.
Pal-mal,
I don't remember.
Well, one of the people who named him is a staff member at WBAI, Ken Gale.
Oh, okay.
Friend of the Friends of Central Park, and he's in. He does an ecology show here, and he's do the comic book show here, and substitutes for me every so often on Hour of the Wolf, and he helped name that Boyd, who lived in the same, who lived above Mary Tyler Moore.
Right, right, but I don't. It wasn't Big Red; it was something else. Red.
Now, Big Red was a red-tailed hawk. of some kind. Might have been a red-tailed hawk. I used to go to Margot Adler's apartment, Central Park West, and watch the raptors. You could say they're mostly red-tailed hawks, occasionally red-shouldered hawks, and every so often, of course, a peregrine falcon. And where I live now in Brooklyn, we can get kestrels, sparrow hawks. And we had a neighbor who put up a feeder right near our house. You know this little enclave I live in. And right in the front of it, somebody put out a feeder for sparrows. And it was the most popular eating place for sparrows in Brooklyn. They could have 150 sparrows or something like that. And Ken Gale came over and said, "Oh, look at that, a kestrel feeder." and sure enough, about 2 weeks later, we heard this call. And this, raptors have very distinctive calls. And sure enough, there were a pair of kestrels
having lunch.
It was amazing. We didn't know who we had lots and lots of sparrows, and I like all the sparrows, but to watch a couple of sparrow hawks doing their hunting bit and all that was amazing. We should repeat the phone number for people to call and pledge. Area code 516-620-3602. A $40 pledge to WBAI will get you an autographed copy of Black Feathers, edited by Ellen Datlow. She will inscribe it. And unfortunately, we're not going to have a way to have it personally inscribed.
Sign it.
Normally, we would. But there is a way that one can get the information on who has pledged, and it was logged out. Somebody signed out.
What does that mean?
There is a I find out who has pledged how much money by going into a browser.
Right.
And in that browser is a listing. We get an email every time somebody pledges, and they signed out of that email.
Before they pledged, they changed their mind.
Well, no. Oh. This is a station thing.
Oh, okay.
This is when somebody pledges, the people who answer that phone at 516-620-3602, they type it in, we get an email saying that, you know, blah, 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 that last week Jonathan Gladstone Gelman donated a whole bunch of money during my show. And thank you, Jonathan. And that's how I find out that somebody has pledged. But here I am in front of the Gmail, and I don't know the password. So I can't find out. Because if they did, we could inscribe personally to the person.
They could call here probably.
I'm sorry?
They could call here.
But I can't take a pledge here.
No, but they can just give their name. They said, "I was the one who pledged." Can they do that?
They could. Would you believe them?
I don't know. I guess not.
WBAI listeners, we know about WBAI listeners. We know about you. Let me try one possible password. If this is the correct password, I'm going to scream bloody murder tomorrow to the management. Wrong password, thank God. Should I try password? Thank God it wasn't that either. And I won't do it a third time or else they'll just get locked out.
Yeah,
exactly. So we're going to have to do without that for now. Should we take a brief musical break?
Yes, that'd be great.
I found a song. Who did we decide it was that I had on the show? Who read a small portion?
Claire Cooney.
It was C.S.E. Cooney, World Fantasy Award-winning writer. She's very proud of that, and she has every right to be. Claire Cooney, read a segment of a story from the forthcoming anthology entitled
Mad Hatters and March Hares.
Mad Hatters and March Hares. And obviously, being a radio person, the very first thing that you do is you go and you play White Rabbit from the Jefferson Airplane, especially if you're of my generation. And I thought, I can't do that. And so I searched the music service that I subscribe to, and I found a song by Rachel Rose Mitchell called Hey Alice, and it sounds like this.
Did the
And that was Rachel Rose Mitchell. And oops, and it's playing again, and that was not my intent. But that is my current favorite Alice in Wonderland song. I mm-hmm. must say, it is.
It's charming.
Really is. I think it really. The lyrics are mm-hmm. great. It really captures it. On YouTube, there is a music video that all it does is it just shows you the words, mm-hmm. like a karaoke mm-hmm. kind of a thing, and the lyrics are the idea of which world are you in?
Right.
Are you here? Are you in some wonderland? Mm-hmm. Did the flowers talk to you? Mm-hmm. I think she really captured it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I like the music of it as well. I just like the style.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. So, again, everybody, Rachel Rose Mitchell. Ask for her by name. And it's from a short album called Shadow Puppets, available primarily on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And a listener, by the way, sent an email saying, "You're right, Jim. Hard to believe, though it may be, a blackbird is a kind of a thrush."
Interesting. Thank you, whoever that was.
I know who it is, but without permissions, I don't. Okay. I'll say it's somebody else named Jim, who contacted me through mm-hmm. Facebook.
Okay.
And
thank you.
Thank you, listener. Listener is coming up with Burn Baby Burn Clapper in about half an hour from now, and so we know that you will all stay tuned for that. Again, this is Hour of the Wolf over WBAI. We beg at intervals. We beg incessantly. Mm-hmm. At 99.5 FM. My name is Jim Freund. My guest this morning is Ellen Datlow. We have been talking about and continue to talk about Black Feathers, her latest anthology from, I guess it's Pegasus Press, but it says
Pegasus Crime.
But it's Pegasus Crime.
Yeah.
And crime to get the name wrong,
mm-hmm.
but Pegasus Crime. But it's a beautifully produced book. And for a $40 donation to WBAI, an autographed copy of this can be yours.
We'll go flying to you.
And the books are in hand. This will not be one of those... not one of those BAI things.
Here it says Pegasus Books, but it's under the division crime. They have
Okay, you see, that's what I saw. Distributed right. by W.W. Mm-hmm. Norton. That's a nice photo of you.
It was a self-portrait.
Really? That's a selfie?
I think. Yeah, must be. Well, I can't swear to it.
What, through the mirror? Through the looking glass?
No, I'm looking at it because I've got it's on my couch, and I assume I took it.
Hmm. Okay,
otherwise,
because you're looking very directly.
I would have given credit to whoever.
And you're not holding out the...
No, because I would do a photo booth on my computer. Photo booth.
Well, no, you're a Mac, I'm a PC.
Oh, right, okay. Well, okay. I was a PC. I have no... I have not drunk the Kool-Aid.
Well, you...
but I gave up on PCs.
That's a phrase that was invented for the Mac.
Was it?
Absolutely. Oh. Absolutely. The magical reality of Steve Jobs and having drunk his Kool-Aid. That phrase was coined for Steve Jobs.
Okay.
So,
but I have not.
and most PC users haven't either. But yeah, I think the better Mac users, like my partner Barbara, she uses a hybrid Mac PC. Mm-hmm. And she uses the Mac very happily. Mm-hmm. But
I still use I use Word for Mac,
So
I use some,
There was one. Nowadays, I'm using primarily Google Docs, and I may switch to Chrome
I have
days.
Chrome.
Chrome is really good. The only problem is...
It hardly ever... Once in a while, it crashes, but very, very, very seldom.
Yeah, well, no, you're talking about a browser.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about a Chromebook.
Oh, okay.
You have Windows, mm-hmm. you have PC,
and
you have a Chrome. It's an operating system.
Oh, okay.
And you can buy a Chrome computer from anywhere between $200 mm-hmm. to $600. They're mm-hmm. very inexpensive.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is pretty much based online. Mm-hmm. It's as if you took your Chrome browser, made it, whole screen.
Right.
And all of your apps were in it and extensions, mm-hmm. and that's what it is, except that it's more stable than the browser mm-hmm. because it is the operating system, mm-hmm. and it's a free operating system. Mm-hmm. The problem is that as a professional audio editor, mm-hmm. I need to use either a Mac or a PC right. to use high-end mm-hmm. Audio editing, which is not at this time available for Chrome.
Right, yeah.
But Chrome is probably my preferred mm-hmm. OS at this time. Mm-hmm. There are things I love about the Mac. Mm-hmm. I am a big fan of Windows 7, mm-hmm. although I am also not blind to things like when my machine crashed today, and because it does that.
Yeah. Well, Word, of course, because it's Word for Mac, still crashes.
Word for Mac...
I mean, it's okay. It's fine, but it doesn't.
You like it? You really do?
I don't know what else I would use. I'm used to Word. I like it.
Try Google Docs.
I don't.
Give it a whirl.
I've looked at. I mean, I have Docs on it, but I don't.
Give it a whirl.
No.
Does the tracking changes?
I don't care about that. I mean, that's not the issue. It's like I like the configuration, and I don't know. I mean, I haven't looked at it. Maybe I'll take a look at it.
Take a look.
How would I? I mean, I just.
You can go to.
I mean, I have Google Docs on my computer. I mean, I have Docs.
It's online.
So I don't understand.
You go to Google.
So it's a word processing system?
They have word processing. They have everything Microsoft has.
Uh-huh.
They have word processing. They have spreadsheets. They have
I use Excel.
Presentation software. They have Google Sheets, which, by the way, uses Excel documents. Yeah. Uh-huh. It uses Word documents.
Well, I have people who – I mean, I have – I work with some Google Docs. My reader uses Google, the spreadsheet and stuff. I'm not wild about it.
Yeah.
I don't like it compared to
Excel. It's not as powerful as Excel. Mm-hmm. It's really a spreadsheet for people who don't love using spreadsheets.
Mm-hmm.
But I find it very handy for putting together schedules and mm-hmm. things like that because I'm not crunching numbers.
Mm-hmm.
If you're crunching numbers.
Yeah, no, I use it for a spreadsheet for numbers.
Then you need Excel.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Lotus 1-2-3 doesn't exist anymore, so mm-hmm. there's no choice. You use Excel.
And what is with Google Docs, the word processing system, what tools are on there?
Pretty much.
Really?
Name it.
I mean, there are things on.
It doesn't do automatic indexing, which Word does.
I don't know what
does.
That means.
Oh, with Word, you can say, take everything here, take all the words, create me an index at the end of where the words appear and what pages they are on.
I don't use that kind of thing.
But,
I mean, I don't like what I mean, I forget what Word program it is, but it's got stuff that I don't want, on the toolbar that you can't get rid of, which I hate.
You can, on the Mac, on the PC you can.
Right, but on the Mac, on Word for Mac you can't.
Yeah, because I don't know, because I think Microsoft, when they created Word for Mac, I think they were trying to tell people, you don't want this operating system. That was always my personal opinion as to why.
Well, I remember when I was using Office. Word, I mean, the Word, when I was still using a PC, I didn't like the upgraded Word either.
Yeah.
They had too many functions.
I wouldn't go near it today. Right. I wouldn't go near that ribbon interface and all that.
Right.
You know what I use?
What?
Word 2003. Or I use Google Docs. Mm. Those are the two word processors I use.
Mm-hmm.
Word 2003, just slightly out of date. Mm-hmm. It's not. It works wonderfully. Mm-hmm. My web design is done on Front Page, which mm-hmm. they haven't even put out a new version of since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
The new versions of Word are, and I still do tech support for a couple of literary agents,
mm-hmm.
so I help them out with stuff, and I don't recommend it for them.
No, this stinks.
Yeah, absolutely. So I agree with you. I agree with you. But I always used to say, choose the software you need, and then get the operating system that runs that software. So, don't be a Mac or a PC. Choose your software and then use the computer that has that software.
Well, I'm not getting a new computer, so no.
Well, when I'm and I'm not suggesting one should switch. Okay. I'm just giving a rule of thumb mm-hmm. for people who I used to advise when I was a technical writer and tech editor at internet.com and when I did this professionally. And for a short while, I gave you some tech support.
Yes.
And now some whippersnapper. Some co-host at KGB Fantastic Fiction. By the way, and everybody should get into their TARDIS and go back about, 10 hours to the KGB bar in order to see Nick Kaufman and Michael Terry Sisko reading tonight.
Well, you'll be able to hear them soon. I mean,
They'll be. I started the tradition of recording those at the very beginning, even before mm-hmm. Terry Bisson was involved. Mm-hmm. So that's prehistory days. When it was,
Mark Jacobson and Alice Turner.
Thank you. It was Mark's name, who I couldn't think of for a moment, which is terrible because I love Mark. And I haven't seen him in quite a while. So I started with them, and then when Terry Bisson, mm-hmm. And then when my show was moved, yanked, usurped, whatever, canceled from Saturdays and moved to Wednesday nights, mm-hmm. I can't do what you have done tonight. I can't go to KGB and yap at everybody because I'm a nonstop talker and I get so hyper that I wouldn't be able to do a show after. Mm-hmm. And tonight I'm on antibiotics, so that was a great mm-hmm. excuse. Mm-hmm. Except it would have made so much sense for me to go tonight. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to, but it was not in the cards.
Right, it's okay.
Alas. But the KGB Fantastic Fiction series and the New York Review of Science Fiction readings, which I am you don't call yourselves curators. I think I came up with that for our readings. Mm-hmm. Because before that, Rob Kilheffer and Gordon Van Gelder and Cherie Renee Thomas and Paul Witkover and all of my predecessors mm-hmm. as people who ran it, Joe Monti. Mm-hmm. They didn't call themselves curators. They were, the hosts mm-hmm. and all that and producers. I was the recordist. Mm-hmm. And I got involved with the series from the beginning because Gordon called me up, the Nursef series.
Right.
And from the very first one. Mm-hmm. So long ago that I recorded it on a DAT machine, uh-huh. if anybody remembers digital audio mm-hmm. tapes. A very, very short-lived technology, shorter-lived than 8-tracks. but the Fantastic Fiction series and the New York Review of Science Fiction series are wonderful
opportunities network, to meet local writers and people who come in from out of town periodically.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have slightly different focuses, I suppose, partly because and also I've done the thing, and I'm doing it more and more, of using guest curators mm-hmm. because it used to be you largely, and then other people who I know who would introduce me to writers that I'd never heard of mm-hmm. and to me this is outreach,
right?
So if I didn't ask Cam Roberson or Rob Cameron or whatever he wants to call mm-hmm. himself on a given day. He did a wonderful job in January mm-hmm. with Fen Jelly Clark and all that. And Amy Goldschlager is bringing mm-hmm. us the older siblings. Malka Older, who...
I don't know. Is she the older one?
I don't know which one is older, but what I've been telling people is because we have Daniel Jose Older and Malka Older, I simply say we're getting older and older.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm
right.
I have so many chestnuts mm-hmm. to pull on that one. That's going to be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And Amy made that one available, and I didn't really know that much about Malka older.
Yeah, I haven't read her novella.
Infomocracy, I...
Is it a novella or a novel?
It's a novel.
Oh, okay.
It's a full novel, and the second book is coming out, I think, in August. Mm-hmm. And it's good. Very, very, very political and oh, so current.
Oh, I'd like to mention, actually... You know, I also
bring that mic closer to you.
I work with on the Tor novella series.
Yes.
And I've got, I was the editor for The Ballad of Black Tom last year, Victor Laval's novella, and any minute...
Which I nominated for.
Oh, good,
Nebula.
Good. Yes. Stephen Graham Jones's novella.
I still haven't met him. I have to meet him.
Oh, he's really sweet. I met him, I guess, at ReaderCon.
Can you get on my radio show? Huh?
You can ask him. He's a New Yorker.
Okay, give me his contact info.
All right, he may not want to get up. He has kids, and I
can record.
Okay.
I can record.
Okay, anyway, Stephen Graham Jones has a novella coming out, Mapping the Interior, which is coming out any minute. Read it? Or just, he's a good writer.
He's a good writer.
Yeah, and Jeff Ford's novella has just been put into production called The Twilight Pariah. It's coming out, I think, this summer.
And the joy of Tor.com and Clark's World and Lightspeed, for which I work. I'm the audio editor, and I'm the podcast host of Lightspeed magazine. The joy of these online magazines is...
Well, that's not online. Those novellas...
Tor.com is.
No, it's not.
It's not?
No. Tor.com, the stories are, we're no longer doing a novellas online. They're the individual books.
Right.
They're done as e-books and print books.
Yes.
Yeah, and done as an individual kind, they're treated as books.
But the joy of the premise, the original premise for Tor.com and all that, and they're growing also. Clark's World obviously does a print edition. Lightspeed does Nightmare Magazine, which I also do the audio editing for. The joy for me is the ability that there is, thanks to Tor.com, whether online or doing their ebooks and print books, is novellas and short stories and novelettes are back, folks.
Novelettes always were. What do you mean? I mean, short stories always were, too. Novellas are more so.
They weren't as accessible until you could get a collection together. Now it's
easier. That's ridiculous. What are you talking about? There are plenty of venues for short stories.
Before electronic?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, what do you think I've been getting from picking my best horror of the year and fantasy for years, for decades, for 20, best fantasy horror for 21 years.
I'm well aware of that.
So there are plenty of short stories out there.
The market has increased vastly.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's a lot easier for writers to find a market. It's a lot easier for readers to just go onto their computer.
Yeah, but it's hard for them to know which are the good markets. There are plenty of crappy markets out there, too.
There are. There are. Yeah. There are some I won't mention. Which is why I'm struggling, because I'm almost mentioning some
of
them.
Yeah.
But people... You know who the editors are. You get a sampling. Pardon me. Yeah. You know who to trust after a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that Tor.com denotes a certain quality.
Mm-hmm.
I
mean, the good thing about Tor.com is that there are several editors acquiring stories, so there are different tastes. And if you want to follow one editor, they have it indexed, so you can see what kind of story, the genre, you can see who edited it.
If you're reading Clark's World or Lightspeed, each one has its own editor, and that one person chooses them all.
Yeah.
Except for certain special issues.
Right.
When we did the Women Destroy Science Fiction and Queers Destroy and People of Color, the Destruction series, which I hope are over. I hope, because it doubles my workload every single time. But they're fun to do, on the other hand. They're great opportunities.
Right.
And those have guest editors.
Yeah, I was one.
Really nice.
For Women Destroy Horror.
That's right. That's right. And who was the host for that? I think it was Gabrielle DeCure. I think it was one of our own readers who was the host for that. We had Mer Lafferty for one. We had Terrence Taylor this year for People of Color. An interesting variety. All I'm saying is, pardon me. Yeah, Ace used to have the Ace double. Tor tried doing similar kinds of things like that.
Right. Well, this is, you're talking about novellas more than short stories.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. Novellas are definitely are being published more in their Cemetery Dance has done them.
Yes.
Subterranean. And there are some British. I think Black Static had brought out a couple of novellas. This is Horror has brought out novellas. And, you know, yeah, the fact that Tor.com is publishing a whole novella, I mean, they've got a whole program of it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, we're out to 2018 already.
I had the joy of doing my first interview ever with Tom Doherty, who is Tor at Forge, and God, he has a history, fascinating history. And we recorded for like 3.5 hours, and I wanted to do another 3.5.
Yeah.
And he's talking about that. He's very forward looking, even though he's been doing this for, well, a number of years.
Yeah,
let's just say he's in his 80s.
Well, it seems like it's doing well for them. I mean, they seem to be happy with how it's going.
Oh, he's very happy with it.
Yeah, because initially they were not. They were just going to do ebooks, and then they decided to do print books. They were going to do print on demand, but they got so many orders, they decided to go traditional.
Yeah.
And do actual print runs.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we also have one coming out from Catherine Vaz. I have a Kelly Robeson novella. And Liz Hand's supposed to be handing one in summer. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So those are the people I have lined
and
up.
And those are the ones, those are the novellas, the length, the kinds of things that wouldn't be so easy some for Liz Hand to have sold.
Well, she sold several novellas. I mean, I bought one for sci fiction. I used to buy them for sci fiction all the time.
Okay, sci fiction being really the original model of all this.
For Omni novellas. We did novellas, yes. We didn't do many novellas in Omni except for that Ford when we did them for the AOL.
Okay, right.
Because we never had room in the print. Right. Yeah. So that's, so doing novellas. In a magazine, it's tough because it's limited space.
Exactly.
Mm. And a lot of people don't want to do novellas because they're expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, we were doing the novellas on on Tor.com, and we were paying by the word, and it got really pricey. So that's kind of why we're not doing novellas online anymore. We're doing them. They're treated as books, and they do P&L, profit and loss statement, like a book, and they give you an advance.
Yeah. Galaxy Magazine, when I was working there for Jim Bain, who was the penultimate editor before Galaxy folded, he couldn't get that many novellas. He couldn't get the funding for it. The publisher was problematic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you the story off air of who the publisher just. He didn't want to pay Harlan.
Oh.
And Jim just came out of his office with a grin on his face that was a number one eating grin. Number one of the seven words you can't say.
Yeah.
He had a number one eating grin when he came out hearing that Harlan was going to get paid. I think he was just fantasizing over the revenges.
You mean if he didn't get paid?
Oh, yeah. Because Jim called him with glee and said, guess what? You know that $56? The amount didn't matter to Harlan. It was the principle.
Right. Well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But let me just finish about the Alice anthology coming out in the fall.
Yeah.
From
Tor. I'm sorry. Yes.
It's all right. and there's stories inspired by, I mean, I love Alice in Wonderland, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, what Alice found there. And I'm actually struggling to write the intro.
Really?
I hate writing intros, and I'm trying to like get a handle on what I want to say. So I thought maybe chatting about it will inspire me.
Okay.
I mean, I've loved Alice since I was a kid.
We should have you, or maybe we can help with a book launch.
That'd be nice. Ooh. Maybe we can do something.
I would love.
I don't. That. I may be going out to. George R. R. Martin invited me back to his movie theater to do something with Alice.
That's New Mexico. You know.
I know, Santa Fe.
Yes.
And to do hats, to have a for the dog collection, we had a creepy dog contest that I judged with Stephen Graham Jones, and he thinks we should do a hat contest, which sounds fabulous.
Sounds mad.
I know it does. It's like I have to find time. If I have time, I will definitely come out there and do it. I have to talk to Tor. I mean, I'd pay for it myself. I mean,
George pay for it.
No, George won't pay for it, but that's okay.
HBO pay for it.
Oh, yeah, right. No.
I mean, just no. You know.
No, but I want to do it. It's just, do I have time? You know, I'm really busy this fall.
Okay,
convention. So I figure, well, if I can go out for a few days, it's time for me to go out there.
You know, it doesn't have to be the day the book launches.
No, I know.
We'll just do an event in the basement here.
Yeah, okay, something, yeah.
The first floor, it's not a basement. Yeah, there is a basement.
I have to see who's in it. I can't remember who's in it, who could come. Delia Sherman, Rick Bowes.
Mm-hmm. Well, Delia's going to be out of town.
Genevieve.
She's...
Why?
Delia and Ellen are moving to Paris for a year.
Are you kidding me?
No.
When are they moving? They didn't tell me.
I don't know.
I have
no
idea.
Soon.
Oh, no, really?
Oh,
my goodness.
I'm pissed off.
Okay, anyway, wait. Alice. So I love Alice. What I really love about Alice, I don't care about Alice herself. It's the characters. It's the Mad Hatter. It's the Griffin. It's the Mock Turtle. It's Tweedledum and Tweedledee and the Griffin. And I said the Griffin already, but the Caterpillar. You know, it's the... The critters.
Cheshire Cat.
The Cheshire Cat especially, yes. And I happen to collect art books of Alice.
Oh.
I mean, I love all the interpretations, the artistic interpretations of Alice. Mm-hmm. And Barry Moser, Ralph Steadman, Salvador Dali, Liz Zwelliger, I think her name is. I think she did one. And I just adore them. I mean, I just, like, collect them. So it's the art as much as... It's the art and the critters.
So are you
going
to be putting the art in the book as well?
No, I don't think we can afford to. I mean,
there should be a special edition, a coffee table edition.
Yeah.
With the art.
I mean, I know a lot of artists. I don't know if we can get permission to do them. Tour. But, I mean, we did the doll collection with photographs of the dolls.
Yeah, yeah.
But to do the art, you know, you'd have to get permission.
Justice.
You'd have to get permission from different people.
Yeah. Artwork is difficult.
And it's tough to reproduce well. So, no. I doubt it. You know, even if you use the tenniel art, and it's like, what's the point of it? It's so, you know, ubiquitous.
Yeah, but you know what? There's always new readers.
Well, you know what? I trust Irene Gallo to design it gorgeously, so I'm not worried. I mean, even if they just do elements, they could do little elements of things from tenniel, whatever.
Just say to me, Irene Gallo is in charge of the artwork, and I'm
you're covered. In fact, at lunch, she told me who's working on the cover, and I almost jumped out. I did jump out of my seat, but I can't say who because he still hasn't handed it in.
Mm.
Like, yes, oh my God.
I'm guessing.
I won't say anything.
I did my guess already.
But anyway, so I don't know what I'm going to talk about in the intro, aside from the art and the critters, you know. It's like, I hate writing intros.
The legacy?
No. I don't want to talk about Carol. I don't want to talk about the legacy. I just...
No, the legacy of the characters, how they still have life. How...
Well, but I don't know why. I mean, the analysis, why do we still love them? I don't know. Because they're adorable.
Because
they're weird.
They're adorable because he somehow knew how to reach the minds of young people in a very special way. He went right to the root of imagination.
It's also the combination of the illustrations, the tenniel illustrations. In the combination, I can't even imagine reading it without the originals.
Yes,
I mean, without seeing the pictures.
Yeah. I see the tenniel.
You know,
in my head,
Barry Moser is fabulous too. I mean, I actually have Prince of the White Rabbit and the Dodo and some other things of his.
Yeah,
And the Mad Hatter, and I have the whole book, and it's like, oh my God, they're great.
Yeah, there's something primal about those characters. I think there's something.
They were very political. I mean, the whole thing is
of
them were political.
But that doesn't.
But who cares now? I mean, these days, you know, it's like I don't care if we.
I mean,
Disraeli.
Oz was political. Oz was all about political satire, and look how those characters have reverberated through the century.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, to me, the best Alice was the Alice in Dream, Dream Child, which was which was Alice Adele.
Wasn't it Dennis Potter?
Did he make Dream?
I think he wrote it.
I don't know if he did, but it's basically the story of Alice Adele. It's her looking; she's elderly. She's
Ian Holm.
And Jane Asher is the mother. And I cried to like half the second half of that movie.
Yes, of course.
I mean, Ian Holm as Dodson is so pitiful. He's so
he really is.
He's so vulnerable. I mean, And but the little girl who plays Alice is this little dark-haired girl with a little bowl cut, and she's the most adorable, perfect Alice.
Yeah.
And she's the antithesis of the long blonde, the blonde-haired little bitch.
Long, Alice. Long-necked.
Yeah. And she ain't, to me, she's
Mia
the Alice.
Wachowski, either. Who's a good actress.
Who's okay. Yeah, I mean, that's fine, but it's not, but this little Alice. And
she was a better Jane Eyre than she was an Alice.
No, she was also too old, but, I mean, the little Alice was very young, and,
yeah,
you know, and basically, it's,
age.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And it's basically the elder, and it has Jim Henson really creepy
yes.
Wonderland creatures in it. Yeah. You know, it's partly animation. It's mostly live action, and it's the old woman who's going to England, who's going to America to celebrate something.
That's an underappreciated movie.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I love that movie.
Well, guess what?
I wonder if it's on Netflix. I'll have to check.
yeah, I'm going to have to do that as well. It's been too long since I've seen it, but it is one of the best Alice movies ever, bar none.
Well, there are also some really good ones by what's-his-name, the animators, Svankmajer.
Yes. Oh, Jan Svankmajer, I think.
Yeah, but I don't think it's pronounced.
It's S-V-A-N-K.
Into the K, Svankmajer, something like that.
Yeah, he's Czech.
Yeah. Yeah,
but yeah, his stuff is.
But
amazing.
It's different. I mean, it's really surreal. It's very it's really effective. But as a human story,
yeah,
I mean, it's about
his non-Alice films are good too.
I'm sorry. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Then there's the Cray brothers, but they did Street of Crocodiles. I don't know if they did an Alice. They might have.
I'm not sure. You know, believe it or not, even with the extra half hour,
I know we're up.
We're up. I'm playing the theme music in the background.
And no one gets questions. Ha ha.
Yeah, so.
Sorry.
But you have a last chance to call. And actually, not a last chance because I'll renew this. But Ellen is here tonight. We'll do that in the green room. Yeah. But
if you want me to sign it to you, you better pledge now.
Well, you say I won't be able to know who it is. That's the problem.
We won't even if. Oh, we won't know no matter what.
We won't know.
Okay, well.
We will later.
Both
we'll,
too
we'll,
late.
We'll
yeah.
know tomorrow.
Right.
And we'll know tomorrow. You won't be here tomorrow.
I won't be here tomorrow.
I could possibly bring the books to you. We'll see if we can do it. It would be nice. If somebody gives a really nice donation, I will deliver it to Ellen, and we will have it properly inscribed. But the telephone number to call is 516-620-3602, or go to, and you can do this after the show is over, you can go to give2wbai.org. And I hope that you do that, give2wbai.org. I will not be here next week. I don't know what will be. Probably a health program of some kind or other, something intended to help raise money for a listener-sponsored radio. And we are hoping, but come after March 6th, assuming we've made our goal, we're back to non-pitching for at least a week. And Hour of the Wolf will then be on from 1 to 3 a.m. in its new time slot. Burn, Baby, Burn Clappers, which started a minute ago.
I have 1 minute, too. Or half
no,
minute.
Well, we go by that clock.
I know. So we have to get out of here.
We have to get out of here. Oh, stop it. I've already restarted my theme. Faded it down, went back up, started it up again. Yeah. Thank you for being here, Ellen.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure.
Okay, and we will do this again soon. Everybody, be sure to go to KGB Fantastic Fiction Readings, which Ellen puts together with Matt Kressel, to the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, which I put together with a variety of folk. And you will meet fabulous people. The KGB series, I liken it to a salon. I really think it's like a salon because you go there and I am just agog at the wonderful people who are there. It's like, you're not anybody if you haven't been to KGB. It's true. It's true.
Someone criticized the name of it. Someone was very offended.
Oh,
and
for like, God!
And I
sake.
Said, and I can't remember if it was on Facebook. I said, just look at the history, please. Just leave me alone.
Yeah, and you know
it's
the
like,
place.
I'm sorry. You know, all these people killed. You know, they killed everybody. I said, it's a bar.
The place was no. The
it
place,
was a socialist.
It was
thing,
a
wasn't
socialist
it?
Yeah, meeting hall, a red meeting hall, mm-hmm. and that the and it was not called that, but it had the decor.
Right.
And that's why Dennis mm-hmm. changed mm-hmm. The called it KGB.
Oh, is that why?
Yes, absolutely. But it was like the Ukrainian Socialist
probably yeah alliance or whatever
organization. It's a wonderful place.
I love the name. That's why I went there.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So
well, someone who is hardly offended.
You
probably
know,
a Russian or someone.
Yeah. Well,
it's
you
like,
know.
I'm sorry. It's like that's the name of it. What do you want? It's like, what are you doing in a place called KGB?
You know, it could be worse if it were Trump fantastic fiction. KGB is so much better than that. You know, I mean, you want horror? You want horror? We've got horror. Oh, God, it's after my show, and I'm broiling now, roiling. Thank you, Ellen Datlow, again. Thank you, listeners, for being there. Tune in next week anyway, even though Lister and I won't be here. But we will be back by March. So stay tuned and keep listener-sponsored radio in existence. Have a great morning.
The red, white, and blue spit on you.
find the people who hate this. These are the places we'll hit.
Panama, talking about Peru, Azania, Brixton, Belfast, can't forget Korea, Beirut, can't forget Haiti, Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico, talking about Uptown, Harlem, New York City, y'all, and Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami, do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville, boogie down, South Bronx, yeah.
My man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home. Land the free, boom, this is the home of the slave. Now hold on just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why wanna scold me when I torch the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn it.
Today, oh boy, about a lucky man who made a way. Although the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh. I saw the photograph. He blew his mind out in a car. He didn't notice that the lights had changed. A crowd of people stood and stared. They'd seen his face before. Nobody was really sure he was from the House of Lords. I saw a film today, oh boy, the English army had just won the war. A crowd of people turned away, but I just had to look.
You're tuned to radio station WBAI, 99.5 FM New York, WBAI.RG. List Alive, 99.5, Burn Baby Burn, the only flag burning radio show in the history of Imperialist Radio in Imperialist USA. 516-620-3602. At the $500 level, we need two pledges right now. Burn, baby, burn.
Woke up, fell out of bed, dragged my fingers through my dreads. Found my way downstairs and drank a cup. And looking up, I noticed I was late. I found my coat and grabbed my hat. I made the bus in seconds flat. Found my way upstairs and had a smoke. Somebody spoke and I
into a dream.
Dedicating this song to Jim Frein. Great show this morning, Jim Frein. And a special guest from the KGB with the anthology book. That's the type of radio show you'll be hearing right here at 99 Cinco. That's the type of radio you'll be hearing at 99 Cinco. This is the super pack to watch your bloody back under these oppressive political times of political paranoia.
Blackburn, Lancashire.